Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 156, I chat with AVS writer Mark Henninger about his comparisons of Blu-ray and various streaming formats. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded April 22nd, 2013, episode 156, Blu-ray versus streaming. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Hulu Plus. Watch as many TV shows as you want, anytime, anywhere, on any device. All streamed instantly to you. Visit HuluPlus.com/TWiT to start your free 2-week trial. That's HuluPlus.com/TWiT. Or go to TWiT.tv and click the Hulu Plus banner. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the Home Theater Geek. This week's guest geek is Mark Henninger, a staff writer on avsforum.com, and who's been doing some really interesting comparisons of Blu-ray versus streaming. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. Hey, Mark, welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me on the show.
You bet. My pleasure. Now, those of you who are tuned in live at live.twit.tv or logged into the chat room at irc.twit.tv can post questions for Mark as we go along, and I will pass along as many as I can. Okay, so today's topic is streaming versus Blu-ray. Now, what brought you to this series that you're working on AVS? What caused you to think about, well, maybe I should write about this?
I'm going to say watching The Social Network about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago. I forgot exactly when. I had an Apple TV at the time, and I bought the movie, and I was watching, and I just thought, you know, this really looks terrible. I should stop spending money on these online movies and just get rid of my Apple TV. And I did that and didn't even think about it. Now, of course, I can watch Apple movie content on my home theater PC as well. So skip forward to this past winter, and it was cold and dark, and I didn't have anything to do, and Skyfall was available through iTunes as a digital pre-release. So having watched basically all the other movie content that I had access to, I said, you know what, I'm just going to give it a chance. So I purchased Skyfall on iTunes, and I thought, wow, this really looks great. It looks nothing like what I decided I was, you know, not going to watch anymore. In fact, I thought it looked so good that if movies kept looking like that, I would just start, you know, watching online distribution films on my home theater. And I figured, you know, maybe I should do a comparison, because a couple weeks later, the Blu-ray came out and I picked it up and I said, you know, hey, you know, I wonder if it looks better, you know, worse, what's the deal? And, you know, at the same time, I was wondering about, and I don't know why I was even thinking about Vudu, probably because it was on my TV. I like installed the app. So I said, hey, you know, why not just find out what the best online format really is by doing a full-on comparison. And I'm a photographer, so I grabbed my camera and I started taking pictures of different freeze frames, basically taking each format and freezing at the exact same moment and trying to compare them. And when I posted that first article, I got a bunch of feedback. And you know, and I was able to come to a conclusion about the suitability of online formats by scrutinizing those frames. I mean, like, not just, hey, you know, I watched it and it looked good, but, you know, really, how close does it come to the Blu-ray ideal, and am I really missing anything?
Does that mean you watch the movie like 3 or 4 times in its entirety?
I'll tell you what, I do watch many of these movies twice. And the reason for that is because I do enjoy watching a digital early release. I'm an impatient person, but I also appreciate the quality that you get on Blu-ray. So when a movie is digitally released, I watch it. And then I get the Blu-ray and I watch it again. But for the comparisons that I've been doing, I don't necessarily watch the movie repeatedly. I just rewatch the scenes that I picked for the frame grab. And in fact, I end up watching them many times because getting a streaming movie to pause on an exact frame is an inexact science.
Indeed. Well, certainly the idea that now we have sometimes movies being released digitally, and I hate to kind of use that word because Blu-rays are digital also. So I want to say released online before the Blu-ray becomes available. And so, as you say, those of us who are impatient might want to go see the online version first because you can see it there before you can buy the Blu-ray. On the other hand, up until perhaps now, the quality of the online release has not been very good. In fact, it turned you off for a year or more before you finally came back to sort of check it out again and went, wow, hey, that's improved quite a bit. Now, one question I have for you is, how do you go about choosing the clips to watch over and over again and take photos of?
It depends on what I want to get out of the movie, but there need to be representative scenes that many movies use a certain type of camera to film the majority of the footage, but maybe in a dark scene or because it's appropriate for an effect, they'll use. I did a comparison of Argo where they use numerous different film stocks to create a 70s look to it, as an example. So I need to accommodate the different looks in the movie because it's ultimately the way the compression interacts with the movie depends on what kind of a scene you're looking at. I suppose that's what I'm trying to say. I need a scene that's dark with a lot of motion in it because I find that compression algorithms have a very difficult time with those kinds of scenes. I need something that where the camera is not panning. Let's say looking at a landscape where you've got a chance to see as much detail as possible. If it's a very brightly colored movie, I want to make sure that I have a scene that captures that. I'm thinking Wreck-It Ralph, really had some amazing colors in it. And that can be a comparison of its own, just how the different formats re-render the color because they don't even look consistent in that sense.
So looking for scenes that might highlight certain particular aspects that you want to focus on and how the different levels of compression might be different. And Luis in the chat room is saying, if something is badly encoded, either on Blu-ray or streaming, it's going to look like garbage. Careful encoding of streaming can rival Blu-ray. It's not an easy task and it takes a long time. I think you would agree, right? It has as much to do with the fact that streaming has to be compressed more than Blu-ray because it has to flow down the internet pipe as opposed to the local pipe within your Blu-ray player and then HDMI to the display.
The movies need particular attention and Vudu, for their HDX format, they actually advertise that they rescan their movies. They try to take the noise reduction away from areas where film grain is supposed to be preserved. That they look at sky areas to make sure that banding isn't occurring. And these are all, I guess, second encode, and maybe they require an operator to point out to the computer what it should be doing on that scene. So yes, to get that compression to that higher level that you need for online delivery, to do it right, you can't just say, hey, increase that MPEG compression and we're set. You really have to take the movie in chunks and apply the appropriate compression and algorithms and kind of supervise that process. And so you do see variability from movie to movie. There's a different quality level that's been achieved in that encoding process or mastering or whatever we we ought to be right. calling it.
Exactly. Well, we're going to take a look at some examples of your latest one. But first, I want to ask you about, you mentioned earlier that in your early attempts at this, you took photographs of the screen. And being a professional photographer, you know, you have a lot of skill at that. But more recently, you've been going more for what we call screen caps or screen captures. What's the difference between them? What are the advantages and disadvantages of each of those approaches?
There's a tremendous advantage to using screen capture if possible, because it just represents the pixels that the computer sees before they get to the display. Any photograph of a display is going to incorporate the weakness of that display, and in some cases that could include shadow processing or contrast enhancement that isn't necessarily in the original movie. So I had wished to avoid using photographs after those weaknesses had been pointed out to me, which they were quite quickly when I posted my first comparison. But I discovered that it's not always possible. And the reason for that is that one of the preferred high-quality formats, Voodoo HDX, is not always available on a PC or on a Mac. Sometimes it's limited to set-top boxes and Blu-ray players with apps in them, streaming devices. And I don't have a good way to take a lossless screen capture from those various devices. So when that happens, when I needed to do a comparison, and not just in Skyfall, but in later movies, and I was unable to use pure screen caps, I still use photography. But to use a pure screen cap allows you to have a pixel for pixel representation of what was in that file. And so when you make a comparison, it's as pure and as accurate as possible.
Mm-hmm. Luis in the chat room says, if I want to compare compression quality, I'll use the starting scene of the flock of birds on the BBC Planet Earth Blu-ray. Now you're doing mostly movies that are just coming out. But it might be fun sometime to go back to something that's been in existence for a while and check out some really difficult scenes like flocks of birds, which of course can degenerate into, you know, all kinds of macro blocking and pixelation and weirdness if the compression isn't done right.
I would say watch out for my comparison of Jurassic Park. That movie exists in many different forms and various qualities.
All right. Very good. And one more question before we get to looking at the stills that you have taken for Django Unchained, which is your most recent comparison, which is on AVS Forum right now. So I do encourage everyone to go to avsforum.com to check that out. But we're going to look at a few pictures right now. But the question I want to ask before we get to that, one last question, is the value of looking at still images. Where you can't really evaluate motion artifacts, can you?
You can spot some. You can spot macro blocking and banding, which would exist whether it's frozen or whether it's moving. Mm-hmm. What you cannot necessarily do is in some freeze frames of high motion, high action scenes, there's a loss of textural detail or perhaps particle detail. You might just see more raindrops, for example, in the Blu-ray. But that's stuff that sure, so the way the mind works, it's not necessarily noticeable when you're watching the movie. I would say that in a scene where the camera's not moving, you've got a still background, that's when the real resolution differences can be more readily apparent. Mm-hmm. You know, a sharper scene simply looks sharper, but when the camera is moving, the motion resolution of movies is considerably lower than the still image resolution, and so there's a lot more at play. I agree with that, and mm-hmm. And the overall experience can be a lot more similar than the still images, you know, might sometimes imply.
Mm. Yeah, that's a very good point to keep in mind. Another thing about some of the comparisons that you've done is that some members of AVS have complained about a technique that you're using that's generically called pixel peeping, in which you sort of zoom in to see a detail that you wouldn't really tend to see if you're sitting at the normal distance away and watching a motion picture. Another variation of that that we're going to see today is we might call brightness enhancement, where you actually on purpose overexpose the image so that you can see the differences and the problems more readily, which of course you're not going to see when you watch the movie in its regular state. What is the value of doing these pixel peeping and brightness enhancement techniques?
Oh, I'll tell you, there are some members who say they can see it on their systems because their systems are so resolute and properly calibrated, but that it's more subtle than when you apply the enhancement. For many viewers, they probably won't see anything, let's say, in the deepest shadows, where you might see some macro blocking if you do the brightening, but then you look at the dark image and all of them, you know, all of the formats look the same, and you think you're just looking at deep, deep shadows. But those last couple of levels of dark gray do exist, and if a very, you know, high definition system renders them, then those artifacts will be apparent. So it kind of depends on how close you're sitting, and also how good your system is, and honestly, I've also found that many people run their TV very, very bright. So perhaps the artificial brightening is not that far from the reality of many people's viewing situations.
Well, that's a good point, although certainly most AVS members are going to have calibrated displays and properly set up displays. But
we hope so.
Yes. We hope so. Yes. Yes, but among the greater public, there are plenty of people who are running in vivid mode or, you know, bright, super bright mode.
They have a huge TV and they're running in vivid mode, and and they possibly don't know, you know, what to watch. You know, I've been asked if they should watch Xbox or Amazon or. You know, Netflix, maybe not understanding that you can't buy or rent a new movie on Netflix through digital distribution. But the issue is one of, is it good enough, you know, to survive on a typical TV with typical calibration in a typical home theater? Maybe the pixel peeping is really only for either people who are too perfectionist or are not perfectionist at all.
Okay, well, let's take a look. We've got some examples from your latest comparison, which is Django Unchained. That came out first on Vudu, I believe, right?
I definitely know it came out first on Vudu because I purchased it in a Walmart, and Walmart owns Vudu, and it was sold to me in a box that looked a lot like it would have contained a Blu-ray, but it really just contained a number.
A little slip of paper with a number that you could use to go log on to Vudu and get this movie.
That's right.
Actually, you did get the Blu-ray in advance of its street release, did you not?
Absolutely. They mailed me a copy of the Blu-ray, and the Blu-ray also included a free copy on iTunes. So the single initial purchase actually got me everything, ultimately.
Yeah, cool. Well, we have, let's take a look at the shadow images first, the shadow detail images. We have Django, I think Shadow something Blu-ray. Here it is in Blu-ray. And we're just going to cycle through them and tell us a little bit about what differences there might be. I mean, right. You can't see any difference here because it's Blu-ray. So let's go to the next one.
Right. So we looked at Blu-ray and then the two iTunes versions, and then quite evidently the Vudu HDX version last.
And clearly the Vudu HDX version's got a lot of banding going on in the background.
Yes, I feel that for this entire movie, the Vudu version had too much noise reduction applied to it, even on bright scenes where it was totally unnecessary. And you can see that there's a grain that's preserved in the iTunes versions that maybe it's exaggerated versus the Blu-ray, but it's a grain. And then when we get to Vudu, they've just wiped out the grain and left us with smooth areas that result in those rough transitions. And that'll result in what looks like an unstable black background. You won't necessarily see the obvious macro blocking, but it won't be a smooth, deep black. It'll kind of move and flicker and mm-hmm. not be right.
Now, those images we just saw, I think, were the brightness-enhanced versions, were they not?
Correct.
Okay, so let's take a look at the unenhanced versions. I think there we go. Right. So that's really what you're seeing on the screen when you watch the movie. It's that dark. And as we cycle through them, we can see that there isn't that much difference. At least, you know, I'm looking at it with bright lights shining in my eyes for this podcast, as you are too. If we were looking at these in a dark room, we might very well see some of those differences.
I'm going to say that it's actually showing something that will be more evident when the movie is playing even than in this still image. In other words, it takes a brightening of the screen capture to show what's going on in the background that would make it so when the movie was playing, those shadows might not look as realistic as they possibly could.
Got it. The next series we have is to show how, in fact, in some cases, the streaming and Blu-ray versions can look very similar. Now, let's take a look at those. Oh, this is not that. This is
an explosion, right?
This is an explosion. So I think we're looking at detail here, are we not?
Right. We're looking at the individual particles that you can make out in the explosion. Because
so these little bright things flying off of the explosion?
Exactly. And what happens is with high motion, these compression algorithms, they refer to previous and post frames to sort of fill in the gaps. But when there's too much of a change, between the frames, information will be lost. And that's often the case with, you'd really have to be seeing this, I think, at full resolution to catch what I'm saying. But there's like dirt and dust in the air. And in the Blu-ray version, it's very granular. You can sort of see into it deeply. Whereas in the other versions, there's a loss of that deep detail. Mm-hmm. But in the real scene, the explosion lasts maybe 10 frames, a third of a second. It's impossible in some ways to make out that difference because it moves too quickly. But it's a legitimate difference. I mean,
yeah, yeah. Now, a couple of people in the chat room are talking about film grain, and you mentioned that earlier about how I think it's Vudu tends to apply so much noise reduction that it eliminates the film grain, which Tarantino, for example, Web 8113 is saying Tarantino wanted film grain. And I think a lot of movie makers, filmmakers who shoot on film want the character of that film stock, which includes this grain. And I've heard of filmmakers who shoot digitally and add film grain in post-processing to make it look more like film. How important do you think that is?
I think it's very important. I mean, as a photographer, I would want that artistic decision to be preserved. But it's not important to everybody. I would say that Django is the second movie I've seen where there was that really heavy-handed application of noise reduction, and Argo was the first one. So here we have two movies that were intentionally filmed with kind of grainy, grainy stock, and where Vudu did a bad job. And I would like to. Well, I'd like to note that Vudu HDX, the claim was made that they actually don't wipe out the film grain, but here I've seen a couple of examples where they are truly not as good as iTunes in that regard. and Voodoo has done much better on modern, sharp, noiseless. I don't know. It does much better with computer animation and CGI spectacle movies that don't use natural film stock. So I do consider it important. I would rather watch a movie that is as close to how the cinematographer and the director envisioned it as possible.
Now, speaking of Vudu versus iTunes, I have seen in a couple of your examples of your comparisons that you actually gave the nod in terms of which was the best streaming quality to iTunes 720p, not even 1080p. Why do you suppose that was?
I'm thinking it's the film grain issue. I did that for Argo, and with Django, I saw iTunes 720 as being very equivalent, possessing as much detail, presumably because iTunes allows just as much or almost as much bandwidth to the 720p compression as it does to the 1080p. The files are maybe 10% larger for 1080p, despite having twice as many pixels. So I'm thinking that maybe the algorithm can work with that grain, doesn't have to get rid of as much of it to achieve that level of compression. I mean, because ultimately the grain in the original film, it breaks up the image. In other words, if you're going to have grain, you're not going to have 100% resolution, in 1080p. It's going to be, it's going to be grainy.
yeah, exactly.
And in an effort to create detail, the true 1080p online delivery algorithms apply noise reduction and then search for as many lines, as many points of contrast as they can find. And that fundamentally alters the image, whereas the 720p version sort of says, hey, that's just grain, and I will, recompress it as grain. And that's why I gave the nod to it. It kept the character of the film. But not everybody agreed to me. Some people thought that the Vudu version of Argo looked the best of all because it had noise reduction applied to it and therefore looked more modern.
Well, and that may be a similar issue to discuss and never resolve as, for example, frame interpolation in LCD displays. Right, you turn on frame interpolation, you get sharper motion. Objects in motion look sharper, but you also get this soap opera effect. And quite a few people hate the soap opera effect more than they like the sharpness of the motion, so they'll turn that off. For others, it's the other way around. Maybe the same thing here. Lawn Dog in the chat room is saying, at this time, I'd rather have film grain rather than noise reduction artifacts. Maybe in time things will change. I suppose that could be, but Web8113 is saying edge enhancement sucks. And that's another question I have for you, actually. How much edge enhancement do you see on these different streaming versions? And you can see it sometime on some Blu-ray titles, but do you see it more in streaming?
I have yet to see a halo artifact, that kind of a sharpening edge effect in any of these movies. I've certainly seen them on older Blu-rays that were badly mastered.
Right, exactly. We do have another series of pictures to look at, which are labeled similarity or similar. And I just want to show people that in certain scenes, these are artificially brightened. This is not what the actual stills looked like when you were looking at the movie. But if we cycle through them, you'll be able to see how very similar they look. And why would that be in this case?
It looks like Voodoo's noise. I'm going to say that because that it was filmed with a less grainy stock, perhaps because it was meant to have a painterly look to it, and that prevented Voodoo from ruining the shadows. I actually think of this scene, Voodoo might even look the most similar to the Blu-ray version, and iTunes seems to have blocked
looks
up
like
the
iTunes
shadows.
iTunes has a little more contrast or dynamic range. There, the Vudu looks a little washed out to me.
Right. Brightened to this level, I don't think we should judge.
We shouldn't judge that. Yeah, okay. All right. I think we have this also in the non-brightened version. There it is right there. So if we cycle through this and take a look, and those of you who are listening to the audio only, I apologize for not being able to see what we're looking at here. We're trying to describe it as best we can. But once again, the Blu-ray looks a little darker there. The iTunes has a good amount of dynamic range, both the 720p and the 1080p. And Vudu, yeah, you don't. It's not as apparent in this unbrightened image. The other difficulty with this image is the light on the poker table is so bright compared to.
I picked it because it has an incredible amount of contrast in it, but without, again, being a. And it's a dark image, but without being grainy. So it shows you something about how the individual formats are dealing with, a complex scene.
Right.
I agree that Vudu does look a bit more washed out, and I'm always surprised when I see these color differences, which seem to come from some sort of an automated contrast enhancement, because I mean, to look at that, you could definitely see that the Blu-ray looks maybe even not contrasty enough, but ultimately, you know, that's the source file. So,
right.
And I've seen that in numerous instances where iTunes seems to have some sort of an auto contrast or something applied to it.
Lawndog in the chat room is asking if you have thought about the movie industry truly wanting streaming to be so good as to equal some type of physical media like Blu-ray. He says like DVD, but we're talking about high def here. I'm not convinced the motion picture studios truly want to give us perfect streaming, Lawndog says. What do you think?
I think there's probably a divide in the industry between those who think that it should exist and should be as good as possible and people who I believe think that it makes it easier to steal.
Mm.
I don't know what the other rationale would be. But it just seems to me that when a movie is sold as a digital pre-release, there's more effort put into it and there seems to be support behind it. And if it isn't, then I don't want to call it an afterthought, but I'm just throwing out a conspiracy theory. I gotta be personally honest. I don't know what the rationale is. I really don't. It might be a recognition that people don't have the bandwidth currently to properly enjoy that experience. Because you can have as high quality, you know, in the stream as you want, but if people keep having buffering issues or what have you, or they have to wait forever to download it, then that's not going to be an appealing product either.
Right. Now, you mentioned something that I wanted to make sure we understood here. The difference that you have experienced between those movies that are released early before the Blu-ray online versus those that are released day and date with the Blu-ray. And in your experience, am I correct that those that are released early tend to look better and have a better quality to them than those that are released online day and date with the disc?
That's my feeling. It's certainly true in the literal sense that the ones that have the concurrent release instead of the digital early release, and this is not all movies, but I'm going to point a finger at Wreck-It Ralph and at Lincoln as the two that were like this. I was not allowed to stream HDX files on my PC, which prevented me from doing the screen caps. I was still able to watch HDX on my PlayStation 3, but I felt that overall there was a degradation in quality in all of the other versions, and that includes the iTunes versions. So I would say that's less friendly, and I don't know what the rationale behind that is. But for example, in the Wreck-It Ralph comparison, I have if somebody, you know, if somebody goes to that and looks in the images, they'll see that the that only Voodoo HDX on the PlayStation 3 approached the Blu-ray version in terms of like the detail that it had. And again, my thinking is the iTunes versions are available on a PC, and the Voodoo HDX was restricted to devices. And that somebody in a boardroom is afraid that if it was playing at full quality on a PC, that it would be just too easy to copy that version.
Mm.
That's again, that's my theory.
Yeah.
To capture it. But yeah, that it would enable one to capture it, because part of the reason I don't and can't do a screen capture from the PlayStation is that it has a the HDMI output is what do they call that? It's encrypted. Well, excuse me.
HDCP copy protected. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, before we get going on, continue on this discussion, and there's plenty more to talk about. I do want to thank our sponsor right at this point for this episode, which is quite appropriate as it happens, because it's Hulu Plus. Now, Hulu Plus is another streaming source of streaming content, and they, in fact, focus more on television shows than movies. They do have quite a few movies, but really, if you want to watch TV shows, Hulu Plus is really the way to go. And not only TV shows that have been on for a while and are now in the archives, but current hit shows. Now you pay a monthly fee as you would for anything, and I particularly prefer monthly fees over pay as you go piece by piece. And just by one low subscription rate, you can have access to all these shows, including this season's hot shows. Which makes it really the easiest and fastest way to get these shows. You don't have to wait for them to come on. Well, you do, but once they're on, you can watch them anytime you want at your schedule. Now, Hulu Plus is available on most devices that have online streaming associated with them, which would include TVs, Blu-ray players, gaming consoles, set-top boxes, dedicated set-top boxes, streaming boxes like Apple TV and Roku, mobile phones and tablets, and just about every consumer electronics device you can imagine. You can also continue your viewing experience seamlessly going from one device to another. Now, as I said, it gives you access to current shows, like, for example, the ones that I like particularly are The Daily Show and The Colbert Report. Who doesn't like those, right? But also the classics like Law and Order. I still like to watch Law and Order. The Office, Firefly. Anybody remember that show? One season, still a huge fan base. I love that show. The Twilight Zone. Who doesn't like The Twilight Zone? So all of these shows and many, many more are available on Hulu Plus anytime you want to watch them. Now, for Twit watchers and listeners, you can get an extra free week if you try Hulu Plus today. They are offering a free trial. It's a one-week free trial, but if you go to huluplus.com/twit, you can get a two-week free trial instead of one. Or you can go to twit.tv and click on the Hulu Plus banner. Be sure to use this URL when you sign up for the free trial, huluplus.com/twit. And we thank Hulu Plus very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks and the entire Twit network. So, Mark, have you ever looked at anything from Hulu? I must admit, I have to find out if they do high def or not. Some of these shows are certainly high def. Have you ever looked at anything from Hulu?
I'm going to guess that I've watched It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
very good. Excellent.
I don't subscribe to cable, so I do depend on Hulu and Netflix for television shows.
Well, there you go. And this certainly brings up one of the polls that I ran, which was, how do you get your broadcast TV? Are you a cord cutter, in other words? And apparently you are.
Absolutely. I spend my entire cable bill on bandwidth, and I definitely enjoy having faster than average internet.
What's your download speed?
It's theoretically it's 100 megabit, and in practice it's between 80 and 90.
Wow. Well, that's plenty. It's certainly more than enough for complete high def streaming. Probably sure, even 4K when it comes, right?
It should be fine for 4K. It would be able to handle two Blu-ray streams concurrently, and presumably with the new compression standard, which is twice as efficient, that would make four times the resolution come in right around there.
Now, have you ever looked at 4K streaming? I think, doesn't YouTube have some of that now?
Perhaps it's the British, is it called Vimeo or something?
Vimeo, okay.
Yes, I know.
Netflix had it, and somebody in the chat room will be able to help me here.
I know there are a few 4K clips out there, but it's not entirely clear if they're showing footage from 4K cameras, and there's this whole 4K mastering of Blu-rays. Like, 4K is being bandied about as sort of like a, as something that makes 1080p better at this point also.
Conversion aspect of it, which is what we're going to be watching mostly on 4K displays, at least at the beginning.
Right. I mean, I'm wondering who really can see 4K streaming on their computer. Now, I've seen 4K playing on a 4K television off of a thumb drive, and I guess I question whether anybody has seen a quality 4K stream on those services online at this point.
We shall see. I think this is a future show for sure. Undermined in the chat room is asking, is it possible that Vudu, being computer-based, has its levels set to 0 to 255 rather than the video levels of 16 to 235 and isn't getting converted back to the proper levels? Maybe there's some hanky-panky going on there. And let me just quickly explain that to those who don't know, the brightness of an image, a video image, is represented in 8 bits of digital information, and that can theoretically go from 0 to 255, which is what computers use. But video signals use the range of 16 to 235. They leave a little foot room called below black and a little headroom called above white. 16 is defined as black, and 235 is defined as white. So what do you think? Is there perhaps some difference going on between these two different standards for dynamic range?
I think it's all in their processing. It's not in the actual video display, because the blacks are at the same point, basically. And you would definitely see the grayish blacks if it was using video levels and displaying them full range on my monitor. Right. It's only when you brighten them that you see those real discrepancies. When I take my Blu-ray screen captures, I definitely have to set it to appropriately. And if with the wrong setting, you can really you lose a lot more contrast than what you're seeing from Vudu right there. Right. There's always been a difference between the three. Vudu, iTunes, and Blu-ray render different colors, different saturation levels. Sometimes it looks like there's some kind of a shadow recovery algorithm. I mean, it really seems like they have a proprietary way of processing the movies for these online distribution releases, and they're not shy about saying it. They exactly say, I don't know what Vudu calls it, psycho visual processing or something, but I mean, they have they basically say that they tinker with the color reproduction.
Well, that's certainly one question about color timing and whether they redo it and one platform versus another, which brings me to the question. Clearly these platforms perform differently. Is there one that generally comes out best in your mind, or is it more title dependent?
As a rule, watching Vudu HDX on some kind of a set top box, or in my case, the PlayStation 3 is typically the best experience. But I now know that if a movie is explicitly filmed filmed, it uses film and has grain, then there's actually a good chance that the iTunes version will look better. But for most modern new release movies that are probably filmed on some digital 4K camera, Vudu HDX actually does the best job consistently.
Let's see. I've got a couple questions in the chat room about ultraviolet. How does ultraviolet enter into any of this, or does it?
Well, it seems to be connected to Vudu. I hope I'm right about that. Ultraviolet is how one gets a free copy of a free digital copy with their physical Blu-ray. So, you know, if you do buy a Blu-ray package, in most cases, you're going to get a free digital copy anyway, and that's become the dominant brand for how to do that. And I see that. Again, I don't know what the corporate ownership of Ultraviolet is, but when I redeem a coupon code, it usually allows me to get both an iTunes and a Vudu version of it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the agreements are. And that's not always the case. If we go back to Lincoln and Wreck-It Ralph, there was no free digital copy. And with Lincoln, there was no free online distribution copy, for example, with Lincoln, but there was an iTunes version that was on a disk as a computer file.
That brings me to the question, what, if any, comments can you make about the difference between live action movies like Lincoln or Django Unchained or so on and animation like Wreck-It Ralph? Are the animated streaming versus Blu-ray, is that I would guess that would be more similar, where they would be closer to the same quality because it's animation. There isn't the same fine level of gradations of color and so on, or am I wrong about that?
Well, there are a lot more edges. There are a lot more fine edges. And Vudu really does a great job with that. So Vudu has really shined when it comes to that. I think that's what I was saying. The animation and modern CGI, they're really very similar in that sense. So they're not more similar. I actually found that that iTunes looks notably more blurry when it's trying to handle animation. And you see the step down from iTunes 1080p to 720p. That's a significant loss because the ability to render those sharp edges, which is really the point of animation. I mean, that's, you know, animation's not airbrushed. It's always drawn with it's drawn with those sharp contrasts. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, you do really see a difference. You see very little difference going from Blu-ray to Vudu with animation, and then you see a significant drop off, and especially when you go from 1080p to 720p on iTunes, which is the opposite of what you see with a grainy movie of a real subject.
And certainly, plenty of modern movies, live action movies, have a lot of CGI in them. And so these comments might apply to certain parts of certain scenes in those movies rather than the entire thing.
That's reasonable to say. That's why I have to actually, or in a comparison, I have to look for different scenes to analyze. And you're making me think of Life of Pi right away, where some of the scenes were incredibly colorful. All the scenes were very resolute, but some were very colorful and some were very dark. So you could contrast the shipwreck to scenes on the carnivorous island during the daytime and how those were rendered. And Life of Pi, there was really which format did the best. Really did depend on the type of scene that we're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Beatmaster in the chat room. I'm sorry. Did you have something to add there?
No, sorry.
Beatmaster in the chat room is asking, what about aspect ratios? Do those change much from Blu-ray to streaming, or are they always the same?
It's been proper and constant so far. It's always the same aspect ratio. And
good. Good. I would hate for them to be cropping and panning and scanning and so on. That would not.
It would make it difficult to do the comparisons if they were different. I kind of depend on being able to copy and paste them the different versions screen captures on top of each other.
Right. F-Loop in the chat room is asking, do the players for all the services produce acceptable frame rate smoothness, or are some of them more herky jerky than others?
I can't speak for all platforms.
What are the platforms you use?
I have tried Roku and I have tried Apple TV. I don't have either of those in my home right now. I use a PlayStation 3 as my streaming box. I also have apps in my Vizio 3D TV, and I do have a home theater PC hooked up to my system. I watch my iTunes content on a home theater PC, and I watch my Vudu content on the PlayStation 3.
Luis in the chat room is saying Brave is a better example of animation. That came out, I believe that's already out on Blu-ray, right?
I'm going to say yes. No, I don't really know.
You don't know. Okay. I think it came out. Somebody in the chat room will correct me if I'm wrong. You were talking about your system, and we've got a few minutes left. I'd love to hear more about your system. For example, somebody early in the chat room at the beginning of the show asked, what are those speakers behind you?
Once upon a time, there were a pair of B52 LX1515 PA speakers. The only thing that remains from them is the horn. What you are now looking at is they're actually Sony subwoofers that were purchased at Walmart and repurposed as standard woofers because I happened to notice in the specs that they were good up to 1,000 hertz. And I basically rebuilt my speakers to what I thought was a functional ideal. I have no real explanation other than to say that I spent months trying out different configurations, and I've always liked a woofer tweeter woofer type configuration. And the reasoning behind using those subwoofers as woofers is because I also built my own subs, and I use those drivers in the subwoofers as well. And
the same drivers that are used in the Sony?
The same Sony drivers that are used in these speakers are used in the subwoofers. So the thinking being that having the same driver covering the entire range up until we get to the crossover to the horn would make it blend better or generally sound more consistent. And all I can really say is I've tried a number of drivers, and I bought these Sony subs from Walmart as a joke. And sometimes the joke is on you or on me because I thought they were genuinely the best sounding best sounding drivers. I mean, the speakers used to have some good Eminence 15-inch pro drivers that were perfectly good in them. And I found that these sounded better. And they also measured better. I mean, they measured truly flat right up to 1,000 hertz, like Sony said.
Wow. So you actually measured these speakers yourself?
Yes. Anything you discuss on AVS at some point, people are going to ask for a graph or some kind of proof that you're not just making stuff up.
Right. So you're obviously a speaker DIYer, huh? You build your own speakers.
I became that, in the past year.
Wow. And you recently, just a little bit off the subject, but you recently attended what's called an AVS meetup or get together of a bunch of people and you were basically auditioning all kinds of different pairs of speakers. This is also written up on avsforum.com. And as I understand it, some of those speakers were DIYs, right? They were things that some members built and brought into the get together to play with some other speakers.
That's correct. There were three DIY models, if I recollect. And I got to tell you the truth, that this speaker, it was built with the intention of bringing it there. And when I finished, it honestly weighed so much that I backed out. But these speakers exist because I had intended to compete at that. Now the DIY speakers use a horn like these do, a compression driver horn, and that actual horn was the result of a DIY design effort. So that's I think that's extremely cool. It's not just I built the box myself. These guys are wiring together and tweaking their crossovers, and they're using a horn with DIY heritage, and they really did sound excellent. And for the money, as long as you're willing to put in the work, DIY could be very rewarding.
Yeah. So, okay, so you've got these Frankenstein speakers that are your front, left, and right. What have you got for center and surrounds?
For my center, I have my own imagination. I use a Phantom center.
Interesting.
Yes, the imaging on these speakers is so good that I would have to have an acoustically transparent screen to put something that could match them and blend in well. I've tried and failed to have a center channel that I could be happy with. And that was not always the case. And my rares are the 2013 Pioneer speakers that you can buy at Best Buy, the Andrew Jones.
The Andrew Jones.
Special. That's mm-hmm. right. And they are all connected to a Pioneer Elite SC55 receiver.
Nice receiver. And those Andrew Jones speakers, I recommend them all the time because they offer amazing bang for the buck. But how about the smoothness of the blend and the tonal blend between the fronts and the rears now, since you have no center? Obviously, the blend between the two fronts into the center is going to be perfect, but what about from the front to the back?
Well, I don't love EQ per se. I think that I've put enough effort into my front mains, so I used the setup to EQ balance the rear to the front. That to me is a good use of the EQ functionality in the receiver. So the front speakers operate basically un-EQ'd, but I use the auto setup to whatever it is that they do to match them up.
MCACC, the Pioneer MCACC. Version of that.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you got a Vizio TV for your display,
right?
Which is a good economical solution. I recommend that all the time as well. And you're sitting, I'm sure, 1.2 to 1.6 times the screen height away, right?
That's absolutely right. I think I'm usually between 1.2 and 1.3.
Right. Web4451 in the chat room is saying, horns are awful. Clip, scream. Now, there are those who believe that, who feel that way, and that's fine. Don't buy a horn speaker. You obviously don't feel that way.
I would say don't go to movie theaters and don't go to concerts either.
That's right, because virtually all movie theaters use horn tweeters and concert venues as well.
Right, and that's what you'll find inside these speakers is the same kind of compression driver that you would find in a professional speaker. I'm not a fan of a cheap consumer horn bookshelf. I think that the real value of a horn is when it's maybe you would say that when the driver itself is the most expensive component in the speaker.
Right, exactly. So what comparisons are coming up next for you? What do you expect to be getting in and looking at in the future?
Well, yeah, you had mentioned going back and looking at some classics, and I do want to do that. And I have two in mind, Jurassic Park and Aliens, which maybe is one of the movies that really made me love home theater. because I think that I spent many years just wishing that screens were big, and that's a movie that I would be able to experience someday with the in the kind of environment that, that I got in a real movie theater. And of course, mm-hmm. that has finally come to be. But maybe that was the movie that first got me to buy a stereo VCR and a Sony Trinitron in the early 90s. And I think back that I was such an audiophile right out of high school. I had a pair of monoblock Sony ES amps, and I traded one for a standalone Yamaha surround sound processor, you know, so I could watch my VHS copy of Aliens in stereo with some surround effects. And I've been hooked ever since. So those are two. And really, I'm going to have to take a look at the movie release schedule to see what's coming out on early release. Because yep. If a movie's coming out on early release, there's a pretty good chance that I'm going to do a comparison of it.
Excellent. I don't know if you went and saw it. I went and saw Jurassic Park 3D at IMAX, actually. And it came out on Blu-ray 3D already, even though it's still in the theaters and it's re-release in 3D. And have you seen it?
I did not. I have sworn off of movie theaters as I had sworn off of online distribution. Maybe movie theaters.
Well, maybe you'll have to go back then.
Yes, sir.
As you did come back to streaming. One more question from the chat room. Beatmaster is asking, what about high-def audio from streaming sources? I do know, I'm pretty sure that there are no streaming sources that offer lossless compression like DTS HD Master Audio or Dolby True HD. Is that correct?
That's right. It will not be lossless if you watch it in online distribution. And in the case of iTunes, it will also always be 5.1 channels, whereas Vudu does offer 7.1 channels on some platforms.
Plus, Vudu, I think, offers Dolby Digital Plus, whereas iTunes sticks to traditional or conventional Dolby Digital, correct?
Correct. Although I heard no advantage to the Dolby Digital Plus except for the extra channels. In movies that utilized the extra channels and were legitimately 7.1 mixes, then the Vudu HDX soundtrack sounded superior. But in Django Unchained, I really tried doing some listening tests, and I actually thought that the iTunes soundtrack was slightly better mastered. And since they were both 5.1, there was... Vudu HDX, the Dolby Digital Plus, something there just didn't come into play, and it had no, it was actually slightly inferior. I think mastering still matters. And there's the Vudu claim that they have 40% more bandwidth than DVD, and in fact that the iTunes is really using the AC3 spec from DVD as their standard Dolby Digital. But that extra 40%, I'm wondering if that's really just channels 6 and 7.
Could very well be. Right. We'll see as we progress in these comparisons. I'm looking forward to many more from you. And I do hope that everyone listening will go to avsforum.com and check them out. Mark, thank you so much for being here. It's been a great hour. I appreciate it so much.
Well, thank you. It's definitely been fun.
Great. So Mark Henninger is a staff writer at avsforum.com, and you can read his stuff right there on the homepage. Also, his own website is imagicdigital.com for his photography business. So go check that out as well. He takes some beautiful, beautiful photographs, and we are very honored to have them on the site on AVS Forum. You can reach me, of course, at AVS Forum as well, and at hometheaterhifi.com. You can email me at scott@twit.tv, and you can follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott. Next week, my guest geek is scheduled to be Bill Schnee, a recording engineer who specializes in very high-resolution audio recordings direct to two-track. That is, he's recording the entire band and mixing live as they're playing to two-track. And I've heard some of these recordings, and they are remarkable. So I'm going to be talking with Bill about how he does that and his philosophy on recording. So I do hope you will join me for that. Until then, geek out.